Welcome back to Rooted in Gwaqwadzwin, where we explore the intersections of land, wellness, culture, and community.
Today's conversation brings us full circle. Back in Season 1, Episode 1, we first learned about Pine River Institute through Dr. Karen Minden, and since then, that relationship has continued to grow in some really meaningful ways.
Pine River has been doing deep, long-term work with youth and families, especially through their wilderness programming and land-based approaches that support healing, readiness, and community.
And today, we get to hear that story from another perspective. We're joined by Dan Artis, who came to Pine River after more than 25 years as an educator and school leader, and now supports youth through their outdoor leadership and campus programs.
Dan brings such a grounded approach to youth wellness, rooted in the land, relationship, and community. We're going to get into what land-based healing looks like in their 6 to 8 week wilderness phase, how they prepare youth for that journey, and how community and family become part of the treatment.
We'll also talk about how Pine River has expanded its capacity, how they balance growth with intention, and how they've been leaning into equity, inclusion, and relationship building, including the collaborations we've shared with them at Gwaqwadzwin.
Let's get right into it. Here's our conversation with Dan Artis from Pine River Institute.
Well, thank you, Sam. It's really nice to be here with you folks today.
Excellent. I guess usually how we start this off is just kind of telling a story, right? So can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to this path now that you're with Pine River and throughout the journey?
Well, sure. You know, I guess my story about landing at Pine River is really one of coincidence and good fortune. As you mentioned, I've been locally employed for quite a while here as an educator. I've always had a passion for the outdoors. And at one point, a colleague had tapped me about an opportunity at Pine River due to retirement coming up. So I think you guys will remember my predecessor, John. He's been with our program.
Absolutely.
Prior to me, you know, he was here for about 14 years, did a wonderful job. Really, really talented guy. Very knowledgeable. Anyway, so, you know, a few things that drew me into his office where I am now is, you know, just an obvious need in the community. I mean, even in this area of Dufferin County down here, it's just so apparent how many families and youth are just facing challenges, you know, related to mental health and substance use, glaring problems on a scale, you know, even in our neighborhood. It just seems to touch everybody personally on some level, you know, and so seeing that need and seeing the work that they do here at Pine River really opened up a door and opened up my interest. I've always had a respect for the land and a love for the outdoors. I think that really comes from my upbringing. I was a fortunate enough kid to be raised by parents who truly valued the environment. They had us immersed in the outdoors with every opportunity growing up. And so I've come to believe in the value of wilderness therapy and being immersed in nature as a real tangible benefit for folks. And I really think it's a necessary tonic for the human soul. And really important for adolescent development generally. So, you know, I moved from education into this role, seeing, you know, a need and an opportunity for me to maybe lean in and help out and do some of the important work. And, you know, I'm just glad to be connected to the folks that are here in treatment and connected to the land.
I'm curious, Dan, when you moved into this new role, what were your expectations or how did you see this sort of rolling out as you moved into it? And did it meet those expectations or has it completely been a unique experience unto itself?
Well, I think a whole lot of that, Matt, to be honest. I mean, yeah, it's been a very unique experience for me coming from an education background. I mean, we are still to some degree a high school here. We teach academic credits, but we're just so much more than that. You know, a colleague of mine was commenting on how varied my role is. And I think it's part of the fun of working here is that every day has a little bit of a different angle, whether, you know, there's so much to do, whether you're working directly with kids or working on the facilities and grounds out here with the kids or, you know, supporting kids up north or, you know, we're doing bees here and we're doing maple syrup and we're out, the students that are on this campus are out every single day, you know, for several hours in the morning. We don't have large indoor facilities. Everything we do is outside. And of course, as you know, all of the folks that come in to start our program spend 6 to 8 weeks in our wilderness program, which was really fascinating for me to take a look at and get to know and get to understand. And I do try to get up there as often as I can. I don't get up there as much as I'd like to, but I love to visit our program up around Algonquin as often as I can. So it gets me out of the office. It gets me outside a lot more than I was previously in any other job I've ever had. So that's a really nice part of it.
I love that. I remember being on a phone call, Matt, I think you were on it one time, and it was for placement students, and the school was asking me, could you walk us through a typical day? And I was like, yeah, honestly, I can't. I'm out on a remote island that I walked out here to. I'm trying to bust ice off of a tent right now, and I'm on the phone call with you. I just don't have a typical day, okay?
Yeah.
And that's for this kind of work, like even though, you know, we spend so much time figuring out all these pieces and how to do it more efficiently and safely, once you get out onto the land there and include those pieces, there's so many variables that come into play. But I'm wondering, Dan, you know, for our longtime listeners, they'll remember season one, episode one with Dr. Karen Minden. We started talking about Pine River and that relationship. But can you walk us through the organization and what that looks like for participants and families?
Well, sure. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things we're quite proud of and we're quite invested in is our own growth within the sector. So, you know, since you had chatted with Karen Minden back in the day, I mean, we have been able to double out our population, our number of beds. So we doubled out the number of families and students that we can serve since we've opened up. We've also brought all of our wilderness therapy programming sort of in-house. We used to have folks kind of outside the organization that would provide that piece. So we're doing all of that in-house, and we've acquired property up north, and we still access Crown Land and Algonquin Park for much of the work that's out on the land. But, you know, when I think about, you know, what we're most proud of is probably growth. Like when I look at our enrollment from back in, say, even just 5 years ago, 2019, I think we admitted about 27 students over the course of a year. So that means that we would have had, you know, 27 families involved in the outdoor part as well, moving through our leadership, our OLE experience. And by 2022, I think we had 50 admissions. So we try to admit every week as much as we're able. So, you know, it means 50 kids coming in and spending 6 to 8 weeks out in the middle of, you know, wilderness and participating in a land-based treatment program with a really small community, 6 to 9 people at a time. So we've grown quite a lot over the years. There's still, you know, lots that we'd like to do. We're trying to branch out and we do outreach, a lot more outreach now with school boards. We're connected to hospitals, and we're trying to, we have a new program called Branch where we're trying to connect with outpatients, the youth in the cities, and connect with folks who are, you know, coming out of a hospital stay, for example, so that we can support them with next steps. As you know, our program is sort of a longer term commitment. We ask folks to come in and spend 6 to 8 weeks in our outdoor land-based programming up north. And that's in preparation or readiness to join our campus community. When students come down from our Woods program to campus, they typically would stay with us for another 11 plus months. Some of them are 18 to 22 months here. So it's a real investment for a young person of a year or two in treatment. And it's all based around their own growth and maturity and keeping them safe in a container that's full of all, you know, the good things in life and none of the bad things of life. We try to give kids a safe space to grow up as adolescents and avoid the distractions that they were otherwise exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such an interesting time too when you look at how technology is being injected into our everyday lives, instant gratification, the ability to connect even through those sort of pseudo channels, so to speak. So I think getting back to the land and getting back to appreciating our relationship with it can be, one, a humbling experience, but also ripe with opportunity for growth and development. So one of the things we've learned as land-based healing becomes not a buzzword, but a more actionable item that we're seeing across the province and the country, it can mean a lot of different things, whether it's a weekend out, a day out, coming back to Netflix and plumbing, or for us being out for 90 days. Yeah. What does land-based healing look like for you? What does it entail? Can you unpack this outdoor leadership experience a little bit for us?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So you know, as I mentioned, we typically try to do a a rolling weekly admission, and we you know, we meet and connect with families down here in Dufferin County, and then we take them right away on admission up to our base, which is just on the edge of Algonquin Park. And there we get the kids outfitted. We kit them out for whatever they need, whether it's summer, spring, fall, winter, whatever. And they head into a small community. We have a 3-to-1 student to staff ratio. You typically in the summertime canoeing season, we'd have, you know, 6 students, 3 staff, and we outfit them completely, and they commit to 6 to 8 weeks of structured work. There's not a lot of extras out there. It's food and water and firewood and equipment and gear, but they have a paper and a pencil, and they have a few things they have to get done while they're out there. And a lot of it is reflective. A lot of it is communicative, communicating with families. It's about healing. It's about detoxing, not just from substances, but from all of the distractions of life. You mentioned technology is a huge one. It's pretty clean living and simple living and clean eating out there. So there's not a lot of coffee and chocolate and caffeine and treats and extra things and cell phones and tobacco or any of that going on for these guys. So, but they're 6 to 8 weeks out there. And really, you know, what we know to be the result of that is the folks' readiness to come and join the community and engage in treatment. You know, a lot of the young people coming in that choose to participate in our program are reluctant, as you can imagine. It's a big step. It's a huge commitment. But what we do is we use that wilderness grounding experience to move them from a pre-contemplative phase to an action phase where they're actually out there reflecting and shifting their disposition and getting themselves to a position of readiness where they can actually join this larger community and find some value in that. And we show them how they're adding value to that. So they add value in their small community in the wilderness. You know all about this, but for us, the kids, it's about them learning hard skills and just having some usefulness to the group. You know, if they don't collect wood, they don't have a fire. If they don't help with the water, they'll be a little bit thirsty. You know, if they don't prep lunch, they're going to be really hungry by dinner. So it's a small group. They've got just the basic things of life and sustenance that they need to take care of day over day. It's very simple living. And they participate. And I really think they develop a sense of accomplishment, a sense of efficacy. And they learn to value that group because they work as a team and they travel as a team. It's a nomadic existence for them, whether it's winter or summer, they're always on the move. Unless, you know, they're hunkering down for weather or whatever, they're pretty much mobile day to day, and they contribute and they learn to be proud of that. And, you know, they may come in at first hesitant and not secure in any of their skills, but they learn quickly. We teach them all kinds of things. We've got a great team up there. They learn all kinds of hard skills and they come up with a sense of pride. You know, it's interesting for most of these folks after they finish up there for 8 weeks or whatever they've done, they come down and it isn't long before they want to go back because we use that space for mentorship as well, for kids to go back and participate when we have room up there. And they really, really value going back up there to support other kids coming in. It's really interesting. It's fascinating how they develop a sense of confidence and a sense of efficacy and skill around what they've learned and what they're able to do. It's about perseverance, really. It teaches them grit. You know, they develop strength that they didn't know they had. And again, it's really just strength in the basics of life. You're eating and breathing and sleeping and doing all the things people are supposed to do. And you're doing it in beautiful places with actually a beautiful group of people that are really caring people. And nobody's judging out there. You know, show up, contribute, be welcomed and welcome others and do the hard work. Because some of it's really hard work. You know, if you're paddling on a windy day, you know all what that's about. A lot of kids have never been exposed to that, right? But they, you know, they sleep well in the evening after a long day's work and a hard day's work, and they feel good about it.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, we have a very similar philosophy in incorporating a holistic experience in the land and working towards building that confidence and that resilience and just that success out of something that seemed insurmountable coming out to it.
Yeah.
It really just becomes a way of life. And especially over that 6 to 8 week period, you can enact a lot of change and influence a lot of change.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, there's always this idea of running land-based programs, and just you get out there with a canoe and some tents, and you get a water filter, and everything's gonna be okay. But we know there's a lot more to it. So how do you prepare, both as an organization and the individual, to embark on this, 6 to 8 week journey?
Good question. So there's so many dimensions to that. I mean, the one thing, obviously, glaring is that we do a lot of training. We want to make sure our staff teams are well equipped and well prepared, right? And well rested. So our teams roll in kind of a week over three. We'll have a team of staff roll in, for example. They're going out and they're connecting and staying with kids for essentially like a 9 day shift. There's 7 days on shift with a group of kids in the woods. Then they shift out, but they're out for a couple 3 weeks, and we have another team roll in. So we make sure that the staff are comfortable and confident, and they're wonderful folks with really, really hard skills. It takes a really special person to be able to be really good at that. And we make sure that they're well equipped. But as far as preparing kids too, that's an interesting one, because a lot of folks come in that don't have a lot of prior experience. We get a lot of urban kids who haven't been outside more than the local park or whatever. Now our folks are typically a few months on our waiting list, so we do outreach and support work while they're on the waiting list, preparing them in many ways to come in. But that's all conversational and interviews and whatnot. I mean, it's really, a lot of ways these kids are coming in cold. It's hard to prepare anyone for, like, if you're going to go up to the woods and jump in February and stay out there for 6 or 8 weeks, that's a lot. That's a shock to the system. And whether that could be in May in bug season, or it could be, August if you're not really a paddler. So it is a big shift, a big shock. But they have a very, first of all, strong ratio. They've got lots of support. They've got super hard skilled staff out there supporting. And most of the kids, we do a staggered enrollment. So if a new kid, we're not having six new kids show up at once. And I always call them kids, but they're young adults. A lot of them are students. We don't have six or eight new students show up at once. We have a rolling admission. So a student would join and would already have a somewhat seasoned team of peers out there as well, right? And they know what it's like. Hey, I remember my first week. I remember my first 2 weeks. So there's a lot of mentorship, peer support that goes on, right? And really just ensuring safety for those kiddos and letting them know that this may be a new and foreign and challenging experience for you, but hey, we've got this. You look at our staff as similar to your staff. I mean, they do this all the time. They'll be out there in all weather all year long in any kind of condition, and they can take whatever's coming, and they know to prepare ahead for, if there's something coming that we shouldn't be in, then we know how to hunker down and keep ourselves safe. So, it is a small community. There's a great ratio. All of the logistical things in place are there to support kids. But I mean, if you're coming in and you have no experience in the woods, you can be afraid of bears, and you can be afraid of every noise you hear in the woods all night. So there's lots of new things and lots of fears to overcome and lots of challenges to overcome. So it really is hard to prepare any young person for that if they don't have prior experience. And we do get young people from all over. Some of our students coming in will have had experience in the woods. They will have had canoe tripping experience or not. And some of them come in with really, really nothing prior. And so it's all brand new to them. And that's part of the challenge, is really being able to support emotionally, mentally, physically, such a diverse range of folks that we're serving too, because we want to serve everybody, right? And we believe everybody can do this. They can manage, they can do it. That's part of the beauty of it too. And the lesson for the students that come in is, you can do this. This will feel hard. This may feel harder than anything you've ever done. This may be the most foreign experience you've encountered in all of your 15 or 18 years. But you can do this, and we're going to show you how well you can do this. And then ultimately, of course, they do. 3 or 4 weeks in, they're developing some comfort, and some skills, and that's the beauty of it. That's the growth, right? But I mean, it's not easy. There's a lot of logistics that go into it, feeding and watering and making sure, from food prep, the food supply and clean water supply, to the coming and the going and the snow, the summer weather, the bugs and all those things. You just gear up for it, right? And you try to prepare the kids for that as best they can and let them understand. Safety is always taught every day, throughout the day, depending on conditions and whatnot. So there's a lot they learn about that too. But just taking care of themselves and taking care of each other in the woods related to weather or other hazards, fire safety, and all of the things, But yeah, simple lessons of life, but all the basic important things of life,
Oh,
without any of the
absolutely.
distractions.
You know, we've had a lot of staff say over the years that they don't really understand or know their job until they have at least a year or two under their belt, because so many things change day to day, season to season. And I even, you know, our admissions team is incredible, and they do so much good work with our incoming participants, preparing them. We do Zoom meetings. We usually we'll do a Zoom meeting with our incoming participants and have our staff out on the land, show them like around one of our camps and what it looks like. And we still have folks coming in and they're like, what do you mean we don't have running water and showers every day? But you know, it is what it is. But it's also not a fit for everyone too, right? Like,
Fair
and we
enough.
accept that. It's land-based healing isn't for everyone, but for those that it is a fit for, it's absolutely incredible. I just wanted to transition a little bit here, and I have to admit, Dan, I'm a super fan of the Pine River Facebook page. Get my top fan award each month, but just in thinking back to what you guys share on social media, and I see a lot of youth out in community and doing different things, different activities. I wonder if you could unpack, you know, why you folks do that and why that's important.
Well, sure. I think, you know, let's start with the microcosm of being out in the woods and land-based programming. The value there is having kids acclimatized to a very small community in which they become valued and they come to know their value, and they value others, and they depend and rely on each other. And that's a really small cohort. And again, I mentioned we intentionally do that because we need to warm them up to the idea that they're going to join our larger community. So we've got, you know, 60 beds on campus, 100 staff around. They're coming to join a larger community. We don't want them to get lost in that. We want them to become a full participant in that and be engaged in the community. And then, you know, from our campus community, our therapeutic community, our educational community here where they live, but we're also part of that broader community in the neighborhood as well, right? So by the time they move through the woods and become, you know, see themselves as valuable members, contributing members of that small community, we try to get them engaged in being contributing members of this community on campus. But then we do try to get them all out into the broader community at some point so that they can also see how they impact, and how they contribute to broader society. I mentioned, you know, most of our kids here are credit earning in high school. And so we all know there's volunteer hour requirements in high school too, right? So we try to build in, and a lot of students that come through here obviously would be credit poor, short on their volunteer hours and behind on lots of things. And they catch up while they're here. They do a lot of credit earning. A lot of the kids graduate high school while they're with us here, which is wonderful. But we also find opportunities locally for them to engage in the outside community here and earn volunteer hours. Some of that specifically for high school, some of that just to simply give back and to grow and to learn from it, right? So yeah, we've got lots of local partners we're really thrilled to that are willing to engage with us, like a couple of food banks. There's a few local farms around where we do some work at a place called Petals Flower Farm, and the kids go out and do some work with a dog kennel, for example, that's local. We've got three or four really consistent local partners where our kids can go out and get a lot of value in contributing, and work as a team, be a part of a team, and you know, and support other people. The other thing we all know about life is, you know, part of us all growing up is understanding it's not all about us anymore. You know, when we're all babies, of course, it's all about us. And as we grow, we learn that there's other people in the world, and they matter to us, and we matter to them. Trying to expand a student's sphere of influence is really part of their maturity, and it's really, really important. So yeah, trying to get them out and about, participating. They help other charities locally doing like even Tim Hortons smile cookie campaigns and stuff. We'll have kids go in and do the cookie decorating, and they'll see how their actions are impacting another charity or contributing to whatever. They're proud of it.
That's amazing. And I see sports involved a lot too, because I've seen, I think, pictures of them, you know, snowboarding, lacrosse. Looks like they're rowing in a like kind of a regatta type thing as well. So it seems like you've continued that passion for sport across Pine River there as well.
Well, we do. And as I said, we really, really value our community partners who are willing to give our folks a chance, right? And create these opportunities. Like you mentioned, we have a partnership with the Island Lake Rowing Club down here, and that's recent, the last 3 years. Like I mentioned, we don't really have a lot of indoor space, rec space. Our kids are out a lot. They're outside for phys ed every day, for gym, for school. And then we get off site for some of the stuff like a rowing club. We run our Orca canoe training skills at a local quarry. There's a C3 CrossFit cross training club down there that lets us use their facility. So through the summer, we run regular canoe courses down there because they've got a great quarry facility where we can do the paddles and the flips, and the water's always nice and clear and somewhat warm enough. So, but without them, we'd be struggling for space to do such things. Yeah, so the rowing club and the quarry, the Mansfield Outdoor Center is now helping us with skiing in the wintertime, mountain biking in the summertime. There's just we're lucky to be in a wonderful space. We're in a pretty rural space with hundreds of acres around us and lots of community partners around us that have access to these different facilities too. And we try to take full advantage of that as much as we can. And that's the other reason we try to have our kids give back to these organizations in some fashion as well.
Amazing. I was wondering if you could unpack the importance of family involvement at Pine River as well, and what that looks like.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely critically important. And interestingly enough, the kids really value it too. We've heard feedback from students who are just, really, really aware and appreciative, acknowledging that their parents are engaged, or a parent or caregiver is engaged with them while they're in here. So, yeah, I mean, we run on a parallel process where we ask families to be engaged. It looks like lots of different things. They engage on different levels. The kids have weekly calls and sessions with family. They typically have Sunday visits up here where family members will come and visit, or students will go off site with families. And, we run parent workshops three times a year. And we run parent intensives where we'll bring small groups of parents on campus with their teens to work through some of the stuff we're doing. But it's really, the concept is such that we make sure folks know that they don't just drop their kid off here and there's a problem with a young person that needs to get fixed. It's really more about, you may have heard maturity model from us a lot of times. Like, we work on a maturity model, and we believe that everybody's maturity gets interfered with at various stages growing up because, things happen and we become sort of paused or arrested at a certain level because we've got things that are, unfinished business or undealt issues. So, kids' development gets interrupted, and we don't believe that, kids are a problem. We just believe that everybody needs time and support to grow and mature, and we need families engaged in that process. So while the students are here for, like I said, typically a year to two, we have the parents kind of walking in tandem with them. Even though they're separate, physically, we bring them together virtually for meetings, weekly, and calls, and then typically, weekly for a visit, and get the parents engaged in the process and working alongside the kids. And a lot of that is really focused on the transition. The best thing we can do for anyone student here is to have them move out of here and move on from here. That's the whole purpose of it, is to be able to move on and move on to next step in life. And so the planning for transitions out means that we need to engage the families all the way through the process, so that together we work on, transition planning, home contracts, and next steps for the family and the youth. What happens after Pine River, and then a wraparound of aftercare support to make sure that things are working as everybody has worked so hard on to be able to sustain once they move out of here. So, family's critically important. I mean, people, youth or adults, can pop in and out of a treatment program for any whatever length of duration. And if they're not able to shift, or if things in life or in their world or in their home don't shift, then typically you go back to old habits and old problems, right? So we're really,
Absolutely.
really focused on growth and change for the youth, but for their situation and their family, as a unit, to be able to move on to something different, rather than just repeating old patterns.
You had a phrase there that kind of cling on to. And
Yeah.
you mentioned expanding the sphere of influence. And to me, that indicates sort of a sliding scale in which they're participating at different levels and sizes of community. So I'm curious, when you look at the intake to the land program, you're effectively, as you mentioned, and we do a similar thing, you're creating a small community that supports the healing, the recovery, and the progression of the individuals participating in it.
Yeah.
What do you think are the pillars of creating a strong, healthy community? And how do you foster buy-in and participation with individuals coming in?
Well, that's interesting, Matt. You know, I guess you caused me to pause and think a little bit on what are the pillars. And I think, you know, our pillars are, you know, we have five foundational values. And thinking about the work that you folks do and the connection, like we try to connect our work to your work, and we take a lead from you folks in a lot of ways. In one way, I'll share with you that I've done work with our students here on the seven grandfather teachings and how closely connected those are to, I mean, we've cooked it down to five, but essentially you can see a lot of crossover. Like our values are courage, integrity, respect, compassion, accountability. Accountability rings true when you just ask that question around, you know, how do you make it work in a small community? Accountability is a big piece of that. Yeah. And, you know, connecting to the values of the seven teachings, bravery, truth, respect, love, wisdom, humility rings true in that way for me too, honesty. So there's something in those pillars, in those core values or the seven teachings. If there's a focus on those things and there's a focus on our own needs or the needs of the individual youth, meaning, you know, you're in the woods in a small community, you need to eat, you need to sleep, you need care, compassion, you need all these things. And all of the tools are right here in a small group of people who share common values and common purpose, direction. We're heading north. We got to get to that lake, that portage. There's a lot of power in that, right? And if you reiterate and you show compassion, you show love, if you provide guidance, wisdom, you model humility, you live truly and honestly, you allow these things to emerge from the folks who are there, right? And you instill them, you make, I don't know, it becomes your compass, right? It becomes how you roll. So if our staff are rolling that way consistently with the folks in their care, I think they really model that. And then the students who are there, of course, themselves, they start to awaken those things in themselves, you know, and see again, they see the impact they can have on others, just extending a bit of compassion or sharing some wisdom. They love to teach each other things. Yeah, I can light that fire without a match. You watch me here and help me out. So it's the simple, simple things. There's so much complexity and so much growth around some really simple concepts, some basic concepts. With some simple imperatives, right? Eat, drink, sleep, move, set up, take care of each other. So hey, I'm not sure I started going off topic there from where you were going originally, but you know, we talk about pillars. I think it's just foundational. Like we use empathy as a tool a lot here to solve problems between folks if there's some conflict arising too, you know. Breaking it down, someone does you wrong, you can be mad as heck forever, or you can have some understanding around how this came up, and showing a little empathy can shift relationship as well. And it's really interesting the work that we're able to do with kids around that too. They just de-escalate, so they learn to de-escalate so quickly and to get along and actually show some compassion and empathy to each other and help each other out. That's it's fascinating, you know, and it reinstills your faith in humanity to see that this works and it's effective and it's really what all humans need, you know? And to your point, I think it's easier to start in a very simple living experience in a very small community. You're much more effective at nurturing those kinds of things. You know, people get lost in a crowd. You get lost in the busyness of a big community, right? When life becomes stripped down and bare and simple and fundamental, a lot of the real important things come out and are more easily addressed and more easily taught, you know?
Yeah, I think that's such a profound moment and opportunity, especially being out on the land and you're in a convoy of a handful of canoes. You can't necessarily avoid it forever because you're going to land at the same camping spot. You're going to have to set up shop together and you may be paddling together. Part of that is being able to sit in a bit of that discomfort and being able to face it and practice conflict resolution safely and with maybe a little bit of a guiding hand.
Absolutely. Yeah, well put.
I'm curious a little bit about, you mentioned some of the growth of the organization as well over the past little bit. So in your role, how do you manage that type of growth? Just given that we're also seeing increasing dynamics with just the behaviors and the realities of what's happening, outside of our safe microcosms of programming. How have you managed growth through all these the past few years?
Well, not without growing pains, Matt, I'll be honest. I mean, and that's the, I guess the answer is carefully, right? We want to be able to serve as many folks as we possibly can because we see the need growing, not only provincially, nationally, whatever, internationally. Like, so, we would love to be able to grow to enormous scale and help tons of people. But as you pointed out, like you can't just, you can't just grow without developing, being really good at what you're doing before you get too big, right? The last, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, we managed to, part of the growth has been we were lucky enough to secure some donor funding and different things put together to add beds to our campus. But then you don't fill them the next day. We got 24 new beds come online. In 2021 into 22, you can't fill them in a day. You take months to fill them slowly. And as I say, we do a rolling enrollment every week. We try to bring a new person into our community. And then folks are kind of graduating from here or moving on into aftercare periodically, not every week, but when they're ready. But over the course of a year, if we had 50 new admissions, we'd have close to that, open folks moving out. But there's a slow and steady growth toward full capacity here, right? And if you bring them in one at a time instead of a whole team of 10, you acclimatize them and you engage them and you invite and you settle people into a community, sort of, one new client at a time. And that works in our OLE, the wilderness program as well. Like I said, we don't send a whole crew up there at once. We send one a week and you're kind of already getting up there with some veterans, so to speak. Kids have been in there 4 or 5 weeks already. It'll take you under their wing, sort of thing. So yeah, growth is challenging, but part of it is making sure we staff up appropriately and always a focus on training and making sure people understand their roles and feel comfortable and confident in their roles. And the other part is incremental growth. You need to bring folks in slowly and acclimatize them to what we do and just try to support them as much as we can.
Yeah, there's certainly a demand from the position, and it's not for everyone, as I'm sure you've seen as well. But when it hits really well, and some of the genuine and authentic relationships and connections that you can create is nothing short of remarkable. The training piece is kind of a good segue into another piece I kind of want to explore, and then I'll pass it off to Stan here. But through your bio on the site, there was mention of board goals like equity, inclusivity, and anti-racism education. It's really interesting because when we started our journey at Gwiqawdzwin, we paired with Pine River to learn a lot of what you were doing, best practices, some of the models, the applications. We were really able to share a pretty meaningful think tank and learn from you. And it seems like we've been able to now share some of our experience with your staff as well. So I'm curious if you can kind of walk us through your vision for addressing, equity, inclusivity, and bringing in some of those cultural competency pieces.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Again, not an overnight endeavor, right? We understand to serve youth to whom we're not used to serving takes time for us to prepare to be able to serve them culturally and otherwise, right? So, yeah, I mean, right now, where Pine River's also moved from a relatively privately funded place over 20 years to being a publicly funded place, and we understand our mandate to be to serve the population of Ontario in all of its diversity, and we're really working hard at that. But that means making inroads into communities who are not aware of us or who may not be comfortable with us. And so we're trying to grow and I'm trying to expand, and we're trying to build capacity to do so and do it well. Whether or not we think we could serve Indigenous youth, for example, very well, would all be relative to, as you say, do we even have the capacity? We could extend, we could try to invite, but we're a live-in treatment program, 60 kids on campus, to bring people in from any neighborhood in any sector of Ontario and actually expect them to land here and be completely comfortable randomly. doesn't sound like it has a lot of chance for success. So we need to preload that. We need to learn. Hence our reaching out to you folks the last couple of years too, to try to connect and do some more learning about your program and how we can best support for Indigenous youth, for example, coming in. We've got a ton of work to do. We feel like we're getting bigger, but we're still a small player in a very broad, you know, and diverse population, right? We call ourselves a 60-bed campus. To represent all of Ontario in 60 beds all at the same time is a really, really interesting task. So we are always trying to reach out and learn more and do better and hire accordingly as well, so that we are able to serve folks that need us and folks that are ready to come in. You know, a lot of young people are reluctant to come in as well. So it's a little bit of a tricky kind of a dance to get. We're a voluntary program, for example, right? So when folks do come in here, and young folks don't always know what they need and what's good for them, we need them to really decide to commit. And so we need this place to be as warm and welcoming as we possibly can, because first impressions are everything, right? We have folks come up here and tour before they decide to commit to the program. We walk them around, they see the place, they see the people, we have lots of interviews. So we're really trying to get good at doing a good job at that, you know, being able to be a warm and welcoming, inclusive place for all folks, so that they do decide and feel comfortable when they do come into the program. And again, like, we need to do a lot of learning, and that's why we were leaning on you folks to do some of that learning. And I think we're going to lean into you again this winter and line up a few more training sessions.
And I have to commend you and the organization for even the part you shared today about aligning some of the principles and the philosophical frameworks of the seven grandfather teachings and four directions and things like that, and finding how it can complement or strengthen your own principles and trying to combine that in a way that is open and inclusive to, you know, the people who initially inhabited the land here. I think that's such a strong commitment, an indicator of allyship and openness and the reality that we're trending in the right direction, so to speak. And I have to say too, I really enjoyed the conversation. It's great that you're making space for us to do it virtually and connect, because logistically that makes a lot of sense. But you can feel the shift when we're sharing an environment in that physical space and you're able to connect at that human level. It's just something that's intangible in that moment. So I just want to say miigwech for having us for that as well.
Oh, well, we're really grateful for the time you folks are able to have supporting us. It really is valued here. And we're really looking forward to getting our canoe down from the ceiling and out for a paddle again once we get some warm weather.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Dan, I guess, you know, something that you've mentioned quite a few times is just about your team. So I guess a two-part question, if you could unpack a little bit about what sort of your staff complement at Pine River looks like. I know it's certainly grown over the years, but another piece that I see on social media, I think, is a focus on staff wellness as well. I think I saw something recently about someone winning the Nancy Ham Award. So I'm wondering unpack sort of some of your staff wellness pieces that you do at Pine River as well, and what that looks like.
Sure. Yeah. I'll try and start at the beginning there, where you mentioned, you know, staffing and complement and where we're at. I think we're probably at about 118 full-time staff here across the organization. But, you know, most of what we do happens here on the main campus. As you know, like, we've got this 200-acre roughly campus on Malmer with three different shifts rolling 24/7. So that would be the bulk of our staff. But we've got our team up north, as I mentioned. The OLE program runs 24/7. You know, three shifts rolling all year long up there. And a lot of them are living geographically up there, but some of them are in Toronto and they come and go. So they're a little bit spread out everywhere. We've got a team in Orillia, a transition house in Orillia, with youth workers up there and psychologists up there. And they're, you know, an hour and a bit away. And we've got our outreach team, our family team supporting based out of Peterborough. So we've got that group of staff out there, CFI, and then we've also got our branch group down in Toronto that's doing outreach to the emergency departments in the city. So we've got a kind of people spread out everywhere. It makes it really hard to bring everybody together into any kind of venue on any kind of timeline. So some of the, you mentioned the Nancy Ham. So that connects to recognition. It connects to an annual. We try to run an annual retreat every year. In fact, you folks were gracious enough to come and join us last year when we brought everybody together in the town hall locally here. And part of what we do is try to do some staff recognition and give staff some feedback around, you know, the great work that they do and recognize their time, years of service and this and that. The Nancy Ham Award itself was put up by her namesake. Nancy was a board member, foundation member, keen supporter, and had put up this award with a little bit of a cash award to go with it annually for staff who are, you know, really functioning over and above and really, really leaning into the role with their heart and soul, so to speak. So every year we find a Nancy Ham. We have a bit of fun with it. We have nominations. We have a bit of a process. So that's kind of our big award annually, alongside a few other bits of recognition. But yeah, just bringing everybody together for training and for recognition is tricky. Like, as you know, when we've asked you folks to come and do training for us, a lot of we had to do some virtual stuff. We had you down in person, which was wonderful because that one venue was the one place we can actually maybe get 100 people together in a room. But even when we're down there, the place doesn't shut down. So you've always got some staff on and some staff off, and really hard to pull everybody together. So you got to make sure that we rotate reward folks. So we have a seasonal celebration coming up, and we'll roll that from, you know, a Thursday to a Friday to a Saturday year over year, because, you know, we want to make sure we pick up the weekend team or we don't leave out the weekday team. So there's different ways we try to organize ourselves to try and connect and capture everybody. But it's not easy, right? Like when you're kind of a diverse organization geographically, and you're in different locations and you're all, you know, we never shut down. We're not a 9-to-5 organization. So somebody's always working when somebody else is off. So just really trying to be mindful about how do we reach everybody with recognition and feedback and training and make sure that we're not missing on anybody on any particular time. You know, there's a bit of a trick to it, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, a question that we often ask other guests as well is, sort of, what's a good news story that they're hearing throughout their work? And you're welcome to answer that question as well. But I was kind of thinking, you know, looking back over your storied career, is there a memory or a story that really stands out as something that just one of your favorite memories from over your career?
Oh, boy. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, impact is everything, eh? And impact is so hard to measure sometimes. And I think so many of us in the role, and all of you folks yourselves included, I think, you know, we work, when you're in service industry, we're caregivers. You don't always understand or recognize your impact, but sometimes it does come back to you and you get feedback. So I'm just trying to think of things where I think about Pine River. I've only been in this role here for about 3 years, but there have been so many occasions where you'll hear back from a student or something around something impactful. I'll tell you what, I'll share an anecdote. Let's go back to the land-based programming, wilderness programming. We got a letter this summer from a former student. So a person who'd been in the program almost 2 years, had come in as an urban kid, not a lot of outdoor experience or hard skills. Had completed the program, had moved on, actually moved on to post-secondary, was moving on in life. Things were going well for, you know, post-aftercare. Got a letter from this person who very, very excitedly wanted to write to us and thank us and say how grateful they were that we'd taught them how to do canoe rescues, because we turned them on to the outdoors and got them interested in the outdoors and paddling in wilderness. Apparently they were out on a canoe trip with friends, peers, no parents, like young people now who are feeling comfortable and confident going out into the wilderness and doing a canoe trip, and had run into a family that had gotten themselves into trouble and had flipped boats. And, you know, it was just a stressful situation and stuff was everywhere. And this student was able to kick in and rescue these people and help them put their boats and their gear back together and dip them out and get them on their way. And had received so much gratitude and appreciation from this family that this person had just, you know, grown 9 feet tall, and the experience having been able to contribute and manage, and just again being able to be that person that was confident and capable, and not only taking care of themselves in the woods, but taking care of others. Anyway, so we got this letter. It was all written, quite excitedly around, "I'm so happy we're able to do this, and thanks so much." And the irony, I guess, was if I remember back to when this person was in doing the Orca courses with us and learning how to do canoeing, I remember it was a little bit of inclement weather, and we were out in a cold, in a colder quarry with kind of a crummy day. And this person was so grumpy about doing that work at the time, right? But then they'd come through full circle, months later to write back and say, "You know what? That was so fantastic and so rewarding, and I'm so glad we got to do it." So, there's little things like that every once in a while that come up, and you just kind of realize impact and just see the growth in folks. And it's really nice to see that growth take place.
Yeah. It's amazing. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Amazing what can come to fruition with the seeds we're planting today. I have no idea
where
it's going to go. Yeah.
There you go.
I do have a final question for you, Dan, just being mindful of time too, but yeah. I'm curious, what's the vision and the future trajectory for yourself in Pine River? Where are you going from here?
Well, that's a great question, Matt. I think slow and steady growth. We don't want to get too big too fast. We want to continue to be able to offer quality service and be good at what we do. And I think as far as where we can have the greatest impact in the short-term growth goals for us, I really think is in the outreach. I mentioned something called branch. So if we can't put capital assets on lands and run, a staff up programs and double out a campus or something like that, we can have a lot of impact with boots on the ground, doing outreach work in communities. Like I say, we've got therapists trained to catch kids coming out of emergency departments and help them figure out and navigate next steps and connect with families and then try to engage families. So, and also us, doing outreach work with other institutions and training with other institutions so that we can influence and we can help and we can support a direction in the sector and not just really in our own organization. It doesn't all have to be about Pine River, but sector wide, there's so much need. For services, and there's so much opportunity for collaboration with partners. So, take yourselves, for example. We can't do what you do. You do what you do, and you do it extremely well. We do what we do a little differently with younger kids, but we can learn from each other. We can support each other. And us doing that, whether it's other school boards or service organizations, I think that's where we'll see our most impact. And our most ability, our best ability to grow and influence is not necessarily in capital development and doubling out what we do and who we are as Pine River. But I really think partnering in the sector and doing a good job together, trying to reach kids and reach families where they are, where they're at, and help folks navigate next steps, be it into a program like ours, into a program like yours, or having pathways to other programs that can be equally helpful to folks. Given where they're at a certain time,
That's great. And I have full confidence that you're going to continue to create positive change throughout the sector and for everyone that you're working with. Just want to say miigwech for your time today, Dan, everything that, you've brought to the table, sharing your insight, your experience, your perspective, and just committing to some of those ideas of allyship and connection and relationship building with us at Kwikwezi and Meekin. It's always a pleasure to sit down and chat with you, and I look forward to further conversations as we continue in our relationship. So, chi miigwech for that.
Miigwech, Matt, and to you, Sam, and thanks so much for having me on today. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat. It's always great connecting with you too.
I like how Dan kept returning to the power of simple living on the land. It's those foundational pieces that make space for real change.
Absolutely. And the way he described expanding a young person's sphere of influence was so powerful. Starting in a small wilderness group, then the campus, then giving back in the broader community. It's such a thoughtful approach.
It was also encouraging to hear how intentional Pine River is about growth, slowing down, listening, seeking guidance, and creating space for youth from all across the province in a way that feels safe and welcoming.
We're grateful for the relationship with Pine River and for Dan's honesty, humility, and leadership.
And if you want to learn more about Pine River Institute, check out the links in the show notes. And if this conversation connected with you, consider sharing it with someone who supports youth or works in the community.
Thanks for joining us again on Rooted in Gwiquadzuan. Keep connected to the land, to each other, and to the work of healing.